tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Common Ground. This is a place where you get real conversations, real connections, and absolutely no filter. Good day, everyone. Today, I have a very special guest on the show today. This young man I've been known for like over 10 years, right? So I remember when I met this young man. It was through my wife and her best friend. His wife and my wife are really good friends. Whenever we get together, we talk hip-hop, politics, and maybe sometimes sports. He's more of the sports guy, though. He has been a great friend to me, and when I need someone to talk to, he is always there. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Tavares Malone. What's up, brother?
Hey, Valentine. How's it going, man?
All right, man. How you feeling? How's everything been doing, my young man?
Everything's good, brother. Been busy, but all is good, man. Just a lot of family stuff, but a lot of good family stuff going on. So yeah, it's kind of been occupying a lot of my time.
Yeah, I understand, though, man. So work been okay, too, on all that good stuff?
Work is good, man. I'm in the aerospace industry, and we're going through it's a really good time now. We're expanding. We're building more aircraft.
Wow.
Get to travel a little bit. So I couldn't complain.
Yeah. You do have a sweet job because sometimes you be traveling like all over the country, all over the world and stuff like that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I haven't traveled internationally yet, but I've been all over the country.
Okay.
It's a good job. It definitely put gray hairs on me, but all in all, it's okay.
Good stuff, though, man. Yeah. So right now, we're going to get right into it, okay? We're going to start a little bit about your little background and how you grew up and everything, all right?
Yeah.
So for those just getting to know you, how would you describe yourself beyond your job title?
I'm an extremely family-centric person. I spend the majority of my time when I'm not at work on family affairs. So either helping someone move, fixing cars that have issues. My wife has a pretty mentally draining job at the hospital. So helping her process the things that she's seen on her shift. Outside of that, I'm from a homebody. You know, I don't really go anywhere on the weekends. I tend to kind of want to stay home and do stuff around the property or sit on the couch. So all in all, I'm just kind of a vanilla guy. I don't really have anything, you know, extraordinary outside of my family, which are great. There's nothing else extraordinary going on in my life.
That's good, though, man. One thing, you know, especially once we reach a certain age, right, in life, there's nothing more important than family.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Your family is very important. You know what I mean? You go to work, you work hard all day, and when you come home, you just want to be alone, be with your family, have a couple of drinks, relax.
Hey, you know that's your safe space, brother. So you want to protect that.
Exactly.
Get back to it as often as you can. So.
Exactly, man.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell me, right? So as a family guy, so what does being a husband, father, and grandfather mean to you at this stage of your life?
Man, it means everything. It's who I am. I mean, every decision I make, every time I leave the house, everything revolves around family. When I go to work, I want to do a good job so I can keep providing for my family. When I'm out and about shopping, you know, buying stuff I shouldn't be buying, I'm always wondering, hey, maybe this money will be a little bit better allocated, you know, for family needs. When I'm going through tough times, you know, in my life, I always think about my family. That brings me comfort. It means everything to me. And like I said, it's who I am. I'm a family man, you know, and I've been blessed to meet a beautiful, wonderful person. She's my life partner. She's my best friend. I have some wonderful kids, some beautiful grandkids. I mean, I'm extremely happy, extremely fortunate to have the family I have, and my mother's great. So it just means everything. It's a source of comfort. It's a source of strength. And, you know, I'm just blessed.
Yes. So I wanted to say about your mom. So how's your mom doing and your sister's doing?
Mom is okay. She's got some pretty significant health problems, and we're trying to help her, you know, find the right doctors. Mm-hmm. We're trying to navigate Medicare, which is not easy to do. But she's got good spirit. Sisters are doing good. One of them just got a promotion at her job.
Okay.
She's in the hospitality industry, so she's doing good. The other one, she's starting her own business. They're doing great, man. I'm proud of them.
That's good, though, man. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that, though. I'm glad they're all doing really great. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
So you were born and raised in Mississippi. What town are you originally from?
So I was born in North Mississippi in a little town called Greenwood, and Greenwood's like North Mississippi. My family's from Money, Mississippi, which is probably a few minutes north of Greenwood. I left Money when I was young, probably 6-7 years old, and moved to a town called Morton. And Morton is in central Mississippi, probably about 30 miles east of Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was raised there. Yeah.
You were raised there? So yeah. even with Mississippi, right? How was the job opportunities there?
So growing up in the town I lived in, the only big employer was a chicken plant. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, if you left, the little town I was in, the next town had chicken plants. I think our county was, fueled by poultry, the poultry industry. Right around the time I graduated high school, they started building an automotive plant in Jackson, Mississippi. This was a Nissan factory. And with that factory came a lot of jobs. And then, Nissan came with suppliers, and those suppliers had jobs. And so when I entered the workspace, there was a lot of opportunity, I would say. It was limited in terms of quantity. You had a whole state vying for, a few thousand jobs. But those people leaving their jobs kind of opened up space at some of those smaller companies.
Okay.
And so, getting a job wasn't hard. You can work if you wanted to work. The quality of that job and the pay was not always the best.
Right.
For a young man, someone who wants to start a career, it probably was a little difficult considering that, like I said, the premium jobs were a few. But all in all, like I said, if you wanted to work, there was a job for you.
I got you. Mm-hmm. So now, what was the everyday life growing up in Mississippi when you were young? What kind of stuff did y'all do and your buddies did?
Yeah.
Did y'all get into a lot of little trouble? Because I know a lot of times those small towns, you know what I mean?
Hey, look, so I break that up into two parts. So when I was young, pre-teenage, my mom, my brother, and I, we all moved in with my mother's best friend. And she had three kids. And two of those kids were boys, and they were about the same age as me and my brother.
Okay.
So the four of us would just get into things. We would go through the woods looking for wild berries. We'd plant watermelon, climb trees. There was a small pond near the house, so we'd go fishing and swimming. And it was a good rural town of time. We would just get out and be boys. As I became a teenager and started reading more, started watching more news, kind of being aware of the world, it was a little hard for me. Because I would see, video footage of, L.A. and New York and, Dallas, Texas. And I always think man, I wish we could have that stuff here, And so most of my teenage years I spent I wish I could do this. I wish I could do this. And, the day to day as a teenager, it wasn't bad. I did have some really good friends. So we would get together and go smoke cigarettes and, do the other stuff little boys did. So it was okay.
So in the music scene, right? What kind of? I know you we love hip hop, whatever. So what kind of rappers or hip hop influenced y'all as young kids or young teenagers back then?
Man, so early on, it was Kool Moe Dee, Heavy D, that 80s pop. One of the neighbors we had when I was a young kid. He was a big hip hop guy. He was probably, 17, 18. And we were probably 12, that age. And he had a car and he'd come home and he'd have some Run DMC, something we never heard of. Well, we didn't have MTV or any type of music channels back then. So it was what you heard on the radio and what you could buy, in terms of albums. But he would just go and bring these albums home and we'd listen to his music. And, and then as I, get into the 90s, it was, artists MC Hammer and Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and just all of those big artists, the big artists on us. There was no big Mississippi artists in terms of hip-hop.
All right. I'm going to tell you something right now. Yeah. This is like hip-hop, right? I just discovered there's one young female, right? and she's a dope. And her, she calls herself, that's her rap name, B for Better. All right, B F O R for Better. And she's from Mississippi.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And if whenever you get a chance, listen to her music on YouTube, man, or Spotify. She got a lot of songs out. That young lady is dope, man. I'm telling you. She's an independent artist, right? And I would believe if she get the right exposure, she could take over the rap game for female rappers.
Wow.
That's how I feel. That's how good she is. And she's very lyrical. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, man. Next time you're on, send me some of her music. I'll look for her, but send me some of your favorite songs from her.
Okay. I'm definitely going to do that, man.
For sure.
Yeah, she's dope. She calls herself the queen of the sip. Yeah, queen of the sip. Okay. Yeah, she good though, man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So how would you describe the culture, right, and sense of community where you grew up?
There was a tremendous sense of community. We know we were in the town I lived in, we were all either poor or lower class, you know. So when you grow up in an environment like that, people are pretty resourceful and they're very neighborly. And so if a neighbor's going through something, you're going to know about it. Small town, everybody talks. So neighbor going through something, you're going to know about it. And if you know about it, you're going to go over and, you know, let them cry on your shoulder. If they need something, you're going to be there for them. And so we had a very strong community. Word traveled fast, good news or bad news. And that kind of something that stick with me today, even living in bigger cities, you know, I still tend to localize the way I look at things. My neighbors, I'm not very close to them in terms of getting to know them well, but there have been times where, you know, they've needed something and I've been there for them and vice versa. But, you know, the benefit I had in growing up where I did was I learned a lot about people, especially people who are struggling.
Okay.
And, you know, humanity doesn't stop because of your finances, and people were so open and giving. You know, I still get, you know, touched just thinking about it, you know. And so, you know, strong faith was another thing. You know, everybody went to church. If they didn't go to church, they had a real good relationship with God and they leaned on him in times of struggle. And those are the things that have, you know, shaped me to who I am today.
Okay. You just spoke on church. What denomination were you? Were you Baptist, Catholic?
I was Baptist. You know, if you grew up in the North, you can look at the Baptists as the Catholics of the South. You know, the Baptist church, at least at the time, was probably the biggest Christian denomination in the South. So, yeah, I was born and bred in the Baptist church.
Okay. Interesting, man. Yeah. So what were some of the challenges, right, you experienced growing up in Mississippi?
The biggest challenge for me at an early age, I was like very aware of the world in the sense that, you know, I read a lot. I was you know, fascinated by, you know, England. I was fascinated by Africa, just other countries and what they're doing. I tended to lean towards books that would give vivid descriptions of day-to-day life in those areas. Mm-hmm. And the biggest challenge I had was, you know, I never got a chance to see them when I was in my youth. And at the time, I never thought I would. And so I would spend my time just fantasizing about living somewhere else. Not because, you know, where I was living was bad. It's just that I wanted to experience something else. And I wanted to experience different cultures. We didn't have Chinese restaurants where I came from. Not in the town I lived in.
Okay.
And, you know, so those type of things where it was just extremely frustrating for me. And then the other challenge is just, you know, being in Mississippi, growing up, small town, is just access to, you know, culture, right? It was either we didn't have a Mexican restaurant, you know, you're going to have fried chicken and whatever else you're going to get at the local. there was just not a lot of culture there. And I think that goes hand in hand with the other worldly things that I was fascinated with.
Gotcha. Now, when you're talking about traveling and seeing outside the world, like Africa, I know you've been to Africa a few times. So tell me your experience being in Africa, though, man. Tell me.
It's beautiful. So fortunately for me, my trips to Africa was to meet my wife's family. So when I got there, being able to meet her brothers, her sisters, her cousins, our kids, you know, it was just, I mean, I think I teared up the first day, just the love and them being so open with me. Outside of the family, the food's phenomenal. They eat very organic over there. Okay. They don't, you know, the meat's not frozen. It's fresh. That animal got killed that day.
Damn.
You know, the topography, brother, look, the countrysides are beautiful. The air is clean. You know, it's just a beautiful thing. Can't say it in, you know, too much, you know, it's just amazing. Yeah. Now there is, you know, some things that you see that, you know, are not all that good. There's some poverty, there's people struggling. Mm-hmm. The outlook on career is not very good. You know, outside of those things, it's just an amazing sight to see. If you want to see nature that's been like untouched.
Yes. That would be my next question, right? I know, you know, my wife has sent me some pictures when she be at home.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been by like the zoo, right? With like, I don't know if it's the zoo, but with like all those animals, whatever. So how far were you from, because there wasn't no fences or nothing, right?
No. So contrary to popular belief, you know, we went to Uganda. That's where my wife is from.
Right.
And the animals are not roaming the street. They're either going to be in a zoo or a reserve. So we did go on a safari the last time I was there. And that safari was very scary for me because animals, it's a piece of land that they've kind of controlled for the animals. But inside that land, the animals roam freely.
Damn. Yeah.
And so we're in a car with a guide and my wife, my son. And we're riding through this preserve, just looking at the animals, and they're just walking by the car. I mean,
what?
Yeah, yeah. So you don't get it.
Hey,
it was terrifying, and at the same time, one of the most exciting things I've ever seen. Like at one point, we got on a boat, and we went down this river, and we saw hippos bathing. We saw elephants. We saw buffalo. I mean, it was just amazing seeing them in their natural environment. Yeah, you know, in the U.S. we go to see these animals in zoos. They're in a sanitized environment. Seeing them free, seeing them click up in groups, it was an amazing thing to see. It's the first time I ever seen that. It was amazing.
Damn. I ain't lying to you. I know when I finally do get a chance to go, I know I'll be afraid, man.
Look here, man. My butt cheeks were clenched a lot.
When my dad wife was showing me those damn, was taking those pictures and showing it to me.
Yeah.
Oh, damn, that's crazy. You ain't scared, which, of course, she's used to it, but I'd be afraid, man.
I was afraid, but I'm glad we did it. I'd like to go back. You know, just, you got to, when you're in an environment like that, you got to control yourself. You can't jump out. You know, you want to get your pictures in, but you got to be very careful. Now, luckily for us, we had a guide. You don't have to have a tour guide. You could have just rolled through the reserve by yourself.
Okay.
But he worked hard to make sure we saw most of the animals.
Okay.
So I without him, I think we still could have had a decent trip, but having him there was just a bonus. Yeah.
Yeah, that's damn good, man. That's real good. Glad to be having a good time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's good. Good stuff.
Okay. I think I'm ready for this because about the job market, right? You said the job market in Mississippi wasn't that great, right?
That's true. Like I said, when I graduated high school, the automotive industry had just come into Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they brought a lot of jobs with them. But, you know, you had a whole state trying to get to those jobs. Those jobs paid more than most jobs in the whole state. And so it was thousands of jobs. But, you know, compared to the job workforce, it was very limited. You know, the market was tough. It's a little bit better now from what I'm hearing.
Right.
You know, if you're content, you could work at the local chicken plant and, you know, make a good living. You can raise a family and retire from it.
Okay.
You know, it just, if you wanted more, the opportunities were very few.
Got you. So with that being said, right, you don't see like a lot of opportunities to be a long-term career, right? At all?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you want out of life. You know, I grew up with people that are working at chicken plants since they got out of high school. They're still there.
Mm.
And, you know, that worked for them. But if you're the type of person that wants to continuously rise in your career and make the most money you can and have the, you know, get as far as you can with your career. Those type of jobs were limited, you know, and that was ultimately, you know, kind of what led me to leave. But, you know, again, the one thing I can say about Mississippi at the time I grew up is if you wanted to work, there was a job for you.
Okay.
You know, yeah, I said quality and pay were varying, but there was some place to go if you wanted to work.
Got you. And so once you left Mississippi, what ultimately made you decide to leave?
So it was a career. So at the time I was working for a company that was a subcontractor for Nissan. They worked inside the factory. I was a site manager and it was a tool repair company. And the job was good. I got paid very well. I had a crew of guys working for me. And I just thought about long-term longevity. I mean, it's a small company. Unless my boss left or retired, I wasn't going to go anywhere. I wasn't going to get advanced. I could have probably tried to parlay that job into a job with Nissan.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was going to be very difficult because, again, there wasn't a lot of openings. People weren't leaving that job regularly. And so I got to looking around and, you know, found a few opportunities that I like. One of them was really good, and I was fortunate enough to eventually get that job. But what led me to leave the state was just career. That job I got was in Alabama.
Okay.
And that was, you know, of all the jobs available in my career path, that was the best one. And like I said, I'm fortunate enough to be able to get the job eventually.
Got you.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know, like, sometimes when certain jobs, right, when people get those jobs, they stay there until they retire. Some people.
You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, especially man.
Those jobs are good paying jobs, you know?
Yeah, man, you'll be walking around with a cane before they retire. You'll be a few years from retirement yourself by the time you got promoted.
Yeah. Even like my last job in Georgia, there was a one nurse that was there. This woman was 80 years old, still working at 80.
Wow.
Yeah, well, she was good. She was in good shape though. That woman worked her butt off. She was in really good shape. You know what I mean? Mm. She was a so nice lady, but very nice lady, man.
Yeah.
So was that an easy decision or did you struggle with leaving home? Was it easy for you? Like I'm gone.
It was a struggle because, you know, my mom, my sisters, and my brother and I were pretty tight unit.
Right.
And, you know, every day of my life up until, you know, leaving was with them. And my sisters were young. They were in their formative years. So
okay.
I definitely wanted to be a part of that and, you know, to help make sure they stayed, you know, on the right path.
Gotcha.
But I had to weigh that against my career and where I was going. And I think in the end, I decided that, you know, I'm only moving 5 hours away.
Okay.
So I'm relatively close. It's going to be better for my career. It's going to give me a chance to get out of the state, kind of spread my wings a little bit. And I think those things were, a bigger factor. Again, I'm only 5 hours away. And when I did get that job, I still stayed in touch with the family. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't there visiting, I was on the phone with them. So it added a little bit of complexity to our relationship in terms of being able to communicate with each other.
Yeah.
But you know, it was a good decision, but it was tough. And my mom didn't take it very well. She's a mom. So she never wants you to really leave the house or leave the area. But it was something I thought was necessary.
I understand, man. So before you got to Savannah, you said in Alabama first?
Yeah. So when I left Mississippi, I went to work for still in the automotive industry. I worked for a company that made car seats for Honda Pilot. That was in Anniston, Alabama, which is kind of roughly central Alabama. And I was there for about a year and a half, and I got transferred down to Columbus, Georgia, which is a little farther south.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Columbus. Yeah, Columbus, Georgia, to a company near there in West Point, Georgia. Same company, just making seats for Kia.
Okay.
And eventually, 2011, I ended up leaving that area and moved over to Savannah.
Okay. Once you moved to Savannah, right, what were some of the biggest adjustments you had to make after moving once you got to Savannah?
The biggest one was the climate here. It's extremely hot during the summer.
Okay.
And they have very mild winters. The winters were great. You know, I don't have to deal with ice and snow and that stuff regularly. The summers being so hot, it was hard for me to adjust to it. I have asthma, and okay. This area just was really tough on me and my breathing. I've acclimated to it somewhat now, but that was the biggest adjustment. Now, fortunately, when I moved here in 2011, my mom and sisters came with me.
Okay.
So, you know, I left Georgia, you know, that side of Georgia, moved over here. They left Mississippi and joined me here shortly after I got the job here.
Okay.
So that made it a little bit easier to adjust having them here for like comfort and, you know, familiarity. The other thing about Savannah is the nightlife. You know, I moved here when I was kind of young. And so I had to learn to balance the nightlife with career and family obligations. So, you know, Savannah is a party city. Yeah. And when I first moved here, I indulged quite a bit. And so I had to learn how to put the brakes on that. And kind of enjoy it in small chunks instead of trying to do it every night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember those days, man, partying all night long. On that long, I had to be at work early in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, I had hair and I wasn't gray then, so I was letting everybody see it.
I get it, man, I get it. Yeah. Right, so looking back, do you feel leaving Mississippi was necessary for your growth?
Absolutely. If I'd have stayed in Mississippi, I think I would have had some level of growth.
Right.
I wouldn't be in the position I am now. Okay. And, you know, career growth. Absolutely. I think, you know, Mississippi, you know, like I said, there's some gold gems out there as far as jobs and careers go. They're just limited in quantity. Being able to be, you know, able to move when you need to. I was single, no kids, no wife. Mm-hmm. Willing to go anywhere for a career opportunity. And, you know, anybody in that position should definitely get out. It was the best decision career-wise I've ever made.
Good.
And it was a domino effect. The decision to leave Mississippi had kind of led me to where I am today. You know, everything that's happened after that decision was just another domino that fell in the right direction.
Okay. And so I know you talk about the nightlife a little bit, but what else attracted you to Savannah once you got there?
So I left the Columbus area for a job here. I'd been hearing about Savannah for years. People have come over for vacation, saying how beautiful it is. And when I was looking for something else, there was a job opening here at a local company that makes, you know, heavy machinery. And, you know, like I said, I was fortunate enough to get that job. And so the job got me here. Another thing I was attracted by the area is the proximity to other things. So Savannah is, you know, an hour and a little bit to Florida. South Carolina is right across the border here. Atlanta's just 4 hours away. I mean, there's so many things around the area that are attractive. It was just, you know.
Yeah. And the great thing about you're right. And the great thing about the area, 9 to 5, you can either go south or north. You can find something.
Absolutely. So, you know, it was the proximity to other things, the job. The people here are extremely nice. They do have a very diverse group here. A lot of people from different cultures, from different areas of the world. It's been nothing but plus. You know, those are all the things that I wanted to live, the places I wanted to live growing up. And a short while after getting here, I realized that, I found it, you know.
Got you. And so how does that now, Savannah, compare to life in Mississippi?
It's night and day. You know, Mississippi is a great place, I think, to retire. It's laid back. I think the people are friendly. Things are slower there. I think, you know, Savannah is more, it's more fast paced. There's a lot more industry here. Like I said, there's more cultural things to do to learn. It's night and day. And again, if you're under 60, you shouldn't be in Mississippi, in my opinion. I think getting out and seeing the world and, you know, living in other areas, even if it's in the South, I think would benefit greatly. And again, lot of love for Mississippi. When I retire, I may move back there. But I think if you're, you know, at this point in my life, you know, there's more positive things about Savannah than Mississippi. That's it. Personal growth, spiritual growth, financially. I mean, everything's, I think it's better for me here versus anywhere in Mississippi.
Okay. So I know you probably just briefly touched on it, but how would you describe like the job market and the opportunities in Savannah?
Very good. Savannah is a growing city. The surrounding cities are growing. We just had a Hyundai plant built here a couple years ago. And that brought with it thousands of jobs. We have about two or three other big suppliers here. We have one of the biggest ports in the U.S. here in Savannah. So there's a lot of good jobs, a lot of good opportunities for growth here. They all play relatively well. It's a vibing, you know, job market. You know, it's a great place to be right now, especially with the growth we're experiencing.
Got you. So do you feel Savannah has been a good place, right, for both career and family, right?
100%. Career-wise, I'm headed in the right direction. I'm headed where I wanted to be. I'm where I wanted to be at this stage of my life. Mm-hmm. For family, Savannah's been extremely good to me. My mom, my sisters moved over here. They've acclimated well. They're thriving. I met my wife here in 2015. Right. And so it's been great for me. I've been blessed.
Good stuff though, man. So now let's talk about your career a little bit, right? So you've been a quality engineer and quality professional for over 25 years, right?
That's right. So
how did you first get into that field?
So I started out in production at a local company that made hydraulic hoses and hydraulic tubes for the automotive industry, you know, GM, Ford, Chrysler. But I was in production, still doing some quality things. You know, if you're in production, you're building things, you're testing it to make sure it's right. That company announced they were closing. And when they announced they were closing, some of the people went out there looking for other jobs. And a lot of people were able to find jobs prior to it closing. One of the guys that left went to a company that made car seats for Nissan.
Okay.
And he called me one day and says, "Hey, Tavares, I got an opportunity here for a quality inspector. And I think you'd be a good fit for it. And I want to come in and interview." So I went in, had a good interview, and got the job. And that started my my career in quality.
Okay.
Been in quality ever since, you know.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So what industries have you worked in, and how have they shaped your experience?
Okay. So, yeah. So like I mentioned, I'd worked for the automotive industry for a while. When I left, and moved to Savannah, I started working for a company that made heavy machinery, skid steers, backhoe loaders. I worked there for about 12 years and then ended up in the aerospace industry, which is where I'm currently working.
Okay.
And the one thing that's constant is making sure that your end customer is getting good value.
Gotcha.
So it shaped me in terms of understanding how these products impact people's lives. You know, I have a car and I've had bad cars. And gotcha. I know what that feels like to have a car that's defective and it looks like it was defective from the factory.
Right.
You know, I've never owned a skid steer or a bulldozer or anything before, but I have family members and friends that have worked in the construction industry, and I understand that equipment has to function right for them to make a living.
Gotcha.
And then, of course, aerospace, you want to make sure that, you know, the aircraft you're building is safe, because I fly, people's families fly. You definitely don't want to put something out there. So I think it shaped me in terms of understanding how what I do is not done in a vacuum, and what I do is going to protect someone from getting hurt or losing an investment or being able to go to work.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So what does, like, For the listeners who may not know, right, give a brief description of what quality engineer actually do, like on a day-to-day basis.
So what a quality engineer does kind of fluctuates, but the core of the job is to make sure that the products that a company's making, the parts going into making that product, make sure those parts are correct, making sure that those parts are installed correctly. Making sure that once that product is built, that it's going through a rigorous inspection to make sure it's going to meet the customer spec, the engineering spec. And your day-to-day can go anywhere from, hey, we've got to measure a bunch of parts to make sure they're correct, to having meetings with suppliers to discuss parts that are defective, to talking to production employees about some problem that they created, you know?
Gotcha.
So we're kind of like, you know, I spend my whole day giving and receiving bad news.
Wow.
That's the job.
That's got to be stressful too, man. And then a lot of logistics to that dagger job right there, lots.
Yeah, I mean, it's it can be very stressful. Again, yeah. It's, you know, if they see me coming and they know it's going to be bad news. Right. But the one thing I have learned.
hold on 1 second. Hey, yeah. Hold on. You said if they see you coming,
that's the nature of the job, brother. If they see me coming or they see my phone, my name on their phone, they know it's something bad, right? Now, what I have learned, though, is how to deliver bad news to people and for them not, you know, so they're going to get defensive, right?
Gotcha.
So the words I use have evolved over the years. But, yeah, we deal in bad news, brother. That's the name of the game.
Damn. Yeah. I'll be hey, if I work for the factory, I'll be, I would hate to see you become a guy. What? No, I'll be like, what now, man? Damn.
It's like, man, you did it again to us, bro. You're gonna run us out of business. I'm going to be selling biscuits.
It just reminds me, like, when I was in the military.
Yeah.
Right? Unless we get, like a announced inspection. No, the big boss, right, might be on another base. So we might have seen it for months. But what if they do, like, a surprise announcement, a surprise, like, visit, something went wrong. You know what I'm saying? So that's how it felt like when I was in the military. Thinking about that, man.
Yeah.
The big boss comes. You know you don't mess up.
Hey.
I like that, man. I like that. That is so funny, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, what has been the most rewarding part of your professional career? Like, I know even like with your job, right? Your job is like an unsung hero, right? Mm-hmm. If the parts, even if it's a small little part, isn't right, and it goes on somebody's equipment, that could miss, that could be between life and death.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And look, it weighs heavy on you because it's not just a life and death. There's people who buy those products to make a living.
Right.
And so if they're not correct, you're going to literally be taking food off someone's table.
Yeah.
And there's people out there who scrounge up every penny they got to buy this stuff. And so you want to, you know, respect that. Respect the person's coin and make sure you're giving them the value that they expect when they buy something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as far as rewarding, I think to me, I've never gone home and thought I compromised.
Gotcha.
Now, there have been times where I made a stand and I was overruled.
Yeah.
But I made that stand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm doing. Yeah, that's the thing I'm most proud of, is just being able to fight the good fight. Mm-hmm. And even when I lose, it doesn't discourage me. I show up the next day and fight it again.
Yeah.
And I can hang my hat on that.
That's so true, man. That's what makes you a daggone good leader.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes you got to fight. Although your boss might trump you, but at least you tried. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've worked with so many people who either didn't have the fight in them, or just didn't care. And I never wanted to be that guy. I saw those guys early on in my career.
Yeah.
I promised myself I'd never be that person. And you know, God has blessed me. I've been able to stand up, and this hasn't been easy. But you know, that is probably the one thing that I'm very proud of.
Gotcha. And that's a good thing though, man. And you can go home at night, sleep well at night because, you know, you did a daggone good job, you know. Because I know sometimes you probably take work home with you. Although you might not be doing work at home, but you just think about the daggone job sometimes when you go home. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, it's inevitable, especially when you're in a high-pressure job with a lot of serious implications. You know, there are times where I've lost sleep.
Yeah.
Thinking about something that went out the door that, you know, I tried to stop it, but I was told to let it go. And management, you know, senior management overruled me. And it just, you know, I lost sleep over that.
Gotcha.
You know, it's it's not an easy journey, but it's rewarding. It's just there are going to be days where you're just really going to feel some kind of way about things.
Got you. So now, right, there's a family in your personal life now. So how has your career influenced your family life, for better or for worse?
There are times when, you know, things get a little stressful. I tend to be a little bit, you know, standoffish per se. I kind of be kind of in my own feelings. So, you know, I'm cordial with my family, but I'm kind of mentally not there. I've gotten better at that over the years, but you know, that has a negative effect. On a good sense, I've been able to make a hell of a living. I do very well, you know, and I've been fortunate enough to work for some really good companies that have been there for me when, you know, things happen in the family and I need time away. You know, it's been a mixed bag, but mostly good.
Good stuff, though, man. So what lessons do you hope to pass on to your children and your grandkids?
The number one lesson would be work ethic. Nothing's free in life, and you can't take shortcuts. So the lesson I like for them to get from me and their mom would be work hard, work honest. But if you want something in life, you got to go to work and you got to work hard.
I agree with that 100%, man. Work hard, a little bit of hard work don't kill nobody. You know what I mean?
You got that right. Yeah.
So how do you balance, right, your work, your family and personal time together? How do you balance that?
Yeah, everything has to have its time. I think to me is the way I manage it. When I'm at work, I tend to focus on work. And when I'm home with the family, the work phone goes on the nightstand and I want to focus on them and what they need. And I don't fight it. You know, if I'm at work and there's something going on with the family, I tend to just, you know, I've learned to shelve it, you know, like, hey, this is something I can deal with when I'm not at work. And when I'm at home and there's, you know, stressful things at work, I've gotten better at leaving it there and focusing on the family. So I'm trying to give everything its time and not let one thing encroach on the time for the other thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's something I'm getting better at. I'm not the greatest at it yet, but I'm working on it.
Yeah, keep working. We'll be good, man. So what does a perfect day off look for you? What's it like during your day off when you're relaxing?
Perfect day for me is not having an agenda. So if I'm off and I don't have a whole list of things to do, I can do what I want. You know, just float, you know, just like, hey, the whole day is open. I can do what I want to do. And on a whim, I could decide to go downtown, go for a walk, sit on the recliner and watch a movie.
Yeah.
So to me, the perfect day off is a day where I'm not obligated to do anything.
Okay. That's good though, man. So now you enjoy tinkering with like gadgets and stuff. So where did that curiosity come from?
You know, growing up, I always had this fascination with things that didn't work. You know, I'm not the type of guy like, man, I want to see how the clock does that.
Right.
I've always been curious when that clock stops working. Like, why did it stop working? What caused that? And so I would take things apart to try to fix it and try to understand it. And I rarely fixed anything. I mean, I wasn't great at it, but that's been my fascination my whole life. Even now, like when the car breaks and something in the car is not working right, I'm just curious, like, why did it stop working?
Yeah.
And so that has really, you know, been the driving force in me tinkering with things. And, you know, as I got older, I got a little bit better at tinkering. I was able to fix a TV recently and
stuff
like that. But, you know, it's something that consumes me. Like when I have a gadget in front of me that I've taken apart, I don't think about anything else but that gadget. So it's a mental relief. I may get stressed out about the thing I'm tinkering with.
Yeah.
But even when I'm stressed out about that, it's good, you know, and it takes my mind off everything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell a little story, man.
Yeah.
Back in this was like about 92, 93. I had been 1979 Honda Civic.
Okay.
My brakes were going bad, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, the old bro, I'm gonna try to change my own damn brakes. Man, I'll make that car even worse, man.
Hey, did it stop?
I was in my driveway, whatever. So I'm trying to, I ended up buying the brake pads, right?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna crank up the car, lift up the car, whatever. And I'm gonna try to change my damn brake, take the tires off and everything. Man, I done messed the whole damn thing up, man. You know, back then, YouTube back then, you know? I said I would never do that crap again, boy. Eventually, I had to get rid of that daggone car because it's going to cost me a lot of money to actually fix the brakes. That's how much the car's worth, man.
Yeah.
I would never do that, man. Trust me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm glad you left them brakes alone, brother.
Yeah, I did, man. Oh, man. So you traveled out extensively. What impact has that had on how you see the world, right? Of all the places you've been, I know you said you've been to India before, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And all the good stuff. So, yeah. What impact has that had on you, how you see the world?
The one thing it made me realize is that, you know, nothing's unique. If you grew up struggling, if you grew up poor, that's universal. So, right. You know, for India, for example, going to India, seeing, you know, the poverty there, it was not unlike some of the stuff I've seen growing up in Mississippi. Of course, right. There's extreme poverty in India that you don't see in Mississippi, but you do see similar type of things. The family dynamics are very similar across the world.
Okay.
The only thing different is language and food. Everything else is exactly the same. And that's something that, you know, that I learned during my travels. Another thing is that, you know, if you're not careful and if you just watch the news and watch the news report on other countries, you can see how biased you can be because you're viewing the world through somebody else's lens.
Yeah.
And going to see those things for yourself with your, your history, the things you grew up with and, you know, the things that have influenced you and seeing the world through those lenses will give you a better snapshot of the world. And you know, people walk away with different things. I've kind of gotten this feeling that, you know, we're all here together. We're all on this rock together. And we may have borders that are separating us, but, you know, we're all connected. There's nothing that you can do in Savannah, Georgia that won't affect the world. You know, it's small. It's kind of like throwing a pebble in a pond and the ripples. Yeah. You know, it everything that I do, I feel like is going to affect someone in Australia or something like that, because that's how connected we are. I learned to appreciate people more. When I was in India, I met a friend there.
Okay.
And my friend is extremely poor, but he had me over for dinner one night. And, you know, that family scrounged up every penny they had to go out and buy food and put a meal together to receive me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that touched my heart because, you know, they were struggling and yet they were willing to spend probably, you know, a week's worth of money just to make sure that I had a good experience at their home.
Wow. And
I've seen that all over India. I've seen that in Uganda when I've traveled there.
Yeah.
So people are self, you know, they care. And, you know, we just can't forget that. And the biggest takeaway from this is don't believe anything you see on TV and don't believe anything you see on the news about other countries. Try to go experience it for yourself. That's something that I've seen, I've experienced. I tell people all the time, man, just go and meet somebody from somewhere new, you know, outside of this country and get to know them and get to know their culture and where they're from. It's nothing but benefits, no negatives.
Gotcha. So now, right, is there a place that you've traveled that really changed your perspective on life? I know you just briefly discussed it. I mean, you see things differently.
I think the biggest impact that a place I visited had was India. It was the first time I left the country. It was a work trip. But, you know, I've seen things there that I've never seen in my life. You know, the scale of some of those, you know, shanty towns where they've thrown together, you know, loose material to build homes. The different cultures mixing, you know, you see Muslims and you see Hindus just mixing together and having their own culture within a culture. It's the first time I visited a country where the different states spoke different languages and how they navigate that. You know, I've had friends from different castes that will walk me through some of the struggles that they've had in their cast trying to get jobs and you know, support their families. Okay. It had a huge impact on me. You know, I came home from my first trip. I was there for about 3 weeks. And I remember flying home and just feeling so happy that I went and that I met some wonderful people. At the same time, you know, I felt extremely blessed for living in a country that even when the poorest people here are still doing a degree or so better than the poor people there.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's so true, though, man.
You know, I was always a proud American, but, yeah. You know, going to a country that doesn't have the safety nets we have here made me even more proud of my country, but still not look down on theirs.
Got you. So
that first trip, and there was many trips after to India and Africa, but that first trip is something that I still remember. Everything about it, the food, the people I met, the smells of, you know, the food, the curry. It stuck with me. It had the biggest impact on my world.
So is the food spicy there in India?
Not as much as you think. You know, everywhere you go, you can get it as spicy or non-spicy as you want.
Okay, I've had some spicy Indian food back in the day.
I had too, but they tend to, you know, if they see you're an outsider, they tend to not spice it up as much.
Got you.
And I love spicy food, so I had to tell them, look, you feed me like an Indian. You know, I won't sweat when I'm here.
So
I've had some very spicy meals, but in general, they're not going to give you a lot of spice if you're not.
Got you.
If you're not local.
Okay. Last question before we had to go. What throughout your whole journey, your whole life, what are you most proud of right now today?
I think I'm proud of the man I am today. And the reason I tell you that is when I was a kid, in my wildest dreams, I wanted to be who I am now. I wanted to be, you know, a middle-aged guy that's got a wife and wonderful kids. Mm-hmm. I wanted to own my own home. I wanted to have a career that paid well and I don't have to spend my day-to-day worrying about money. I wanted to be somewhat respected in the community. And I have all those things now. So I'm proud of the man I've become. And I'm going to tell you, it's not just because of the decisions I've made. I've had a great mother that raised me right. I have a great wife that's been there by my side, giving me, you know, good advice and giving me guidance. I have great friends that have pulled me to the side and left and said, hey, man, you know, you might want to straighten this out.
Yeah.
So I've been shaped by the community, but I'm proud of the man I am today. That's the thing I'm most proud of.
And you know what? On that note, man, that's a blessing, man.
Amen.
You look at your life and like, damn, I got a real good life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have a family. You know what I'm saying? That's very important. Family to me, especially once you know you reach a certain age, you have to have that family structure means a lot.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Just like me, you know me. I like my beer, right? I love to get my little beer, my little music. I'm good. As long as my family has everything that they want, just give me my beer, my music, whatever. I'm good.
That's it. Look, give me that couch and that recliner and a remote and a nice drink. I'm good to go.
Exactly, man.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you so much, brother, for joining me on the show today. We're going to catch up, all right, soon, all right?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you for tuning into Common Ground. Until next time. Keep the conversation going.
You're tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.